Welcome to the UTG podcast, and we're continuing our little mini-series on rethinking evangelism. And today we're delighted to have with us Gareth Edwards from Perth. So welcome to the podcast, Gareth.
Thanks for having me.
For those who don't know Gareth, Gareth moved to Perth, having been brought up in Elgin. Before then, he went to St Andrews University to study business management, and then following graduating from there, he worked for SSE. In marketing and community liaison. So all of those things, I'm sure, were quite helpful in his full-time role now as he seeks to reach out with the gospel. He commended in 2016 and focuses his labours in and around Perth. So we're delighted to have you and to speak to you, Gareth, about the whole idea of evangelism. So, Gareth, as you started to engage in gospel work, were there any people that were kind of influential to you in how you approached working in the gospel?
Yeah, I suppose there were a number of other believers here in Perth that took me under their wing a little bit. One man particularly, John Campbell, was a real help to me. He had been an evangelist for many, many years. He was an older man, I suppose, at this point, but still had a real heart for the gospel. When we moved to a new building, maybe 2008, 2009, we had a blank canvas, really, as to how to reach out into the community. So he really took me under his wing in terms of going out door-to-door visitation, literature distribution, visiting people in their homes, starting to run Christianity Explored type courses, which was something very new to us at that point. So John was a big help to me. And there was another man, Peter Brandon, as well. Again, another older man when he came to be with us in Perth, a man who had been an evangelist for decades and decades, but still had a very fresh approach to evangelism and how to connect with people nowadays.
Yeah, Peter Brandon, I think, is somebody that there's all these wonderful stories about Peter as he engaged in evangelism. And there, I know, having spoken to him on the few occasions we did, that there was a real dependence that he had on the work of the Holy Spirit and the importance that we as believers needed to be clean vessels. And did he speak much about that side of evangelism with you?
Yeah, and I suppose the thing that really impressed me about him was his prayer life. You know, any time that I ever spent with him, he always wanted to pray about everything. And, you know, even visiting him in hospital, visiting him in the cancer hospice just a week or two before he went to heaven, really I should have been praying for him, but he was wanting to pray for me, and that left a real impression on me. His prayers, even in our prayer meetings in Perth as well, and his heart for the gospel. I suppose the thing with him and with John actually was the fact that although they were older men at this point, they still had a very fresh approach to reaching out to people, and they saw the need perhaps to adapt and keep up with the changes in society and not just to rely on doing the same thing that we'd always done. That I suppose is the big lasting thing that's really stayed with me.
Yeah, no, that's obviously we want to speak a little bit about those kind of adaptations in their methods, but just I'm curious, when you talk about his prayers in the prayer meeting, different about Peter's prayers in the prayer meeting?
Well, they were always kind of short and to the point, but you always got the impression this is a man who's really in touch with God. This is just something about his prayers that you had the feeling that they were making contact with heaven. I don't know if that's the right way to put it or not, but he would always pray very specifically for things. Mm-hmm. I remember even sometimes he didn't know necessarily the people's names that he was praying for. He would describe them to the Lord. So there was a man that used to come along with a big white beard. I'll never forget him praying for that man in the prayer meeting as the Viking man. So yeah, Peter was a great man of prayer. And probably that was the thing that impressed me most about him. He was known, obviously, throughout his life as a great preacher. But the thing that really impressed me was the fact that he was a great prayer as well.
Yeah, which I think probably was one of the reasons why he was a great preacher, was because his preaching was accompanied by prayer. And I know in my own life, it's easy to focus on things which are more public. And prayer and your prayer life is the kind of hidden part of your Christian witness, and sometimes is more neglected. You've probably heard the same story that I have. And because it came from Peter, then that I would give it a degree of credence. But a lot of people today have heard of Christianity Explored. And Peter's claim is that course was based on an actual course that he had developed back in the, I think it must have been the 60s or so, when even at that point, he noticed that there was gospel effort was very much focused on events, but he felt the need that assemblies needed to be and local churches needed to be involved in evangelism all the year round, not just when there was a visiting preacher coming. So the idea of the course that he developed. Are you familiar with the course and what he talked about with that?
Yeah, we spoke about that a few times. It was really part of a 2-year plan or a 3-year plan for reaching out into communities, and it involved systematic visitation of the communities with these different pieces of literature that were based on certain subjects, which then became pretty much the theme of the Christianity Explored course when that was eventually developed. But the idea was to take people on a journey, a logical kind of step-by-step journey that explained the Christian faith, starting from, you know, point zero, you know, is there a God? So that was a kind of starting point. And then you kind of develop what's wrong with the world that we live in today, what's the answer to it, and so on. He talked about that and how he would, if he was being asked to go and take a campaign of gospel meeting somewhere, he maybe got to the point where he almost sort of insisted that the local church actually went through this whole process of doing the groundwork beforehand.
Yeah,
to ensure that when he eventually arrived to take these meetings, that there was actually going to be people there to listen to the gospel.
Yeah, no, it's interesting just on that point of sometimes assuming what people know. And again, we live in a culture now where people haven't got that background of Sunday school or Christian grandparents. It's very much kind of an atheistic culture and society. You might be familiar with the term that those in New Tribes Mission use, and they have that term creation to Christ, because as they go into these unreached tribes in or across the world, they realize that you're having to work from the baseline of no knowledge or belief in God, right? And you need to build up to the cross. And I suppose that we have to be thinking about that same approach as we're dealing with people in the communities that we live in amongst, that it's that same kind of complete ignorance of anything to do with the Bible. So we have to really start at the ground zero. So you talked about the fact that both Peter and John helped you think in a fresh way about how to evangelize. So what kind of direction did you take when you were looking at things from a fresh perspective?
Yeah, I think my approach is just to keep my eyes open for opportunities to make connections with the community. I think maybe one of the things that we've lacked over the years is the initial kind of reaching out to the community. We've become quite insular. The majority of Christians that I know don't have many non-Christian friends. Maybe there's sort of a few work colleagues that they know a little bit, people at school or college, but we don't really know that many people who are not Christians. So that kind of leaves us slightly disconnected with the community. So I think the starting point, it's almost, I think there's a term that's sometimes used, pre-evangelism. But it's just making that initial contact with people out there. And for me, there's so many different ways that we can do that. Sometimes looking around at need in the community, and need can present opportunity to us, and help us to build a bridge and establish relationships and contact with people, from which we can then have the platform to share the gospel with them.
Yeah, I'm reminded there was a friend of ours that was telling us about a missionary in one of the countries in Africa, and they were moving to a new area, and their approach was, well, what's the need here? And the need was actually a lot of the people couldn't see, so that there was need of somebody to kind of help them with glasses and that kind of thing. So this man, who I think at this point was in his 60s, came back to the UK, retrained in some kind of rudimentary optician skills, and was able to take just a handful of glasses out, and it made a huge difference. And that was his in to the community, and it commended the gospel. I suppose then when we transpose that to our culture, we think, well, everybody in the UK is well catered for because we have all the government agencies to do everything for us. But what's been your observation in terms of need in the community where you're based?
I mean, for example, we would run a couple of soup kitchens every week in a mobile food bank type thing. And through that, we've contacted hundreds of people over the last 5 years or so. We ran a football type outreach with young men. And again, it's a slightly different type of need. It's a social need, I guess, for people to have a bit of contact with one another and enjoy a bit of exercise and do something that they enjoy. But it's still meeting a need in the community. Mm-hmm. Again, we would have contact with probably hundreds of young guys through that work. We recently started a community lunch, a monthly thing, kind of aimed more at older people in the community who are maybe a wee bit lonely and just needing to get out of the house a little bit and have a bit of contact with people. We've started to run maybe every 2-3 months sort of family fun day type things at the hall. Again, it's just to see the need of something for families to do. So, you know, it's not necessarily always the need for food or something like that, or money or anything. It's other types of needs that you can spot in the community where there's maybe a little gap, and they're not being catered for. And if you can meet that need, it gives you an introduction to a lot of people and helps you just to start that process of building a bit of relationship with them, earning their trust and starting to get the gospel across to them as well.
Yeah, that's a really helpful observation, I think, to when we think about need, that although as a culture in the West, we are, from a physical need, quite well catered for often, not always, but there is huge need when it comes to things like friendship and companionship, which, despite all our wealth that we have, people are still very, very lonely. And that there's a huge need in that. So that's a really good way to look at things. The other thing that you mentioned there was earning people's trust. Again, I suppose I've never really thought about that, but I suppose the assumption would have been in a past generation, the very fact that you were a Christian or you were a preacher would have given you an element of kudos and respect, whereas that's definitely not the case now. So there is this need to kind of earn people's trust, because again, that there's been so much misuse of trust. Do you find that that's a big barrier to overcome?
Yeah, I think it probably is. I think like you say, there's been a lot of scandals that have been very sort of public. There's a lot of misconceptions about Christianity as well, kind of going back to the thing that people are not familiar with what the message of the Bible really is anymore. So people have kind of got this, their own ideas of what they think Christianity is all about, which is not necessarily true. People, I suppose, one of the other things in recent years is there are maybe a lot more self-help philosophies now, a lot of other support groups that are available to people, whereas maybe years gone by, if you had some kind of problem, if you were struggling, if you were needing help, the church would have been your automatic place to go. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, I think there are so many other options for people, and there is a kind of big push on self-help type things. And I think it's just trying to show people that, you know, the Christian message is a reliable message. We as Christians are people that you can trust, trying to model Christ likeness to the people to gain that trust as well, just so that people can see that this is something that really is real. It makes a difference in people's lives.
Yeah. No, it's really helpful to think about need and the meeting of the need. But I know that for lots of Christians, there is a concern that the church just becomes another kind of support group, and that it loses the emphasis on the gospel. But what's been your experience in terms of, do you feel that by doing these different things like the soup kitchen or the football outreach, that you lose focus away from the gospel?
No, certainly that's not been my experience anyway. I mean, we incorporate the gospel into these activities. So, you know, at the soup kitchen, we would always present the gospel. We'd have a 5-minute gospel presentation there. The football group that we did, again, there would be a gospel presentation at that. So the people coming were very clear about, you know, what our motives were. Our motives were to show the love of God, I guess, but also to share the message of God's love as well. And so that was always a big part of what we've been doing in these types of events.
So you're again, you'll be quite upfront at the start about the fact that there will be a gospel presentation. It's not something that's hidden or sprung on people at the end.
Yeah, I mean, we wouldn't necessarily, when we're advertising it, call it a gospel presentation, because that doesn't really mean much to people anyway. But we would just say there's going to be a little thought for the day from the Bible, yeah, or something of that kind of nature. And people then know to expect it. People actually respect it as well, because you're doing something kind for them. You know, people will listen to what you have to say, and they will listen with a measure of respect for you, and therefore for the message that you're presenting, because you've shown that kindness to them.
Yeah. And again, I think that is entirely in line with the biblical model. When you think about the ministry of the Lord and the apostles, that the way that their focus was the gospel, but they still sought to do good works that glorified God and was, in a sense, the introduction to the spiritual need that people had when the Lord met their physical need. What about, do you find that you try to bring people to other things? If they start to come to the football or the soup kitchen, is your hope that they would then start to attend other things that the Assembly at Perth provide?
Yeah, I mean, I think that again leads to another big sort of topic of discussion about having suitable things to then invite interested people to. Sometimes there's a barrier in terms of people coming into church buildings. I think it's not an environment that people are used to going into anymore. And so, you know, that then presents a whole other discussion on how do we make it more appropriate or welcoming for people who are coming in. You know, the onus really is on us going out, and I suppose that's the main focus of the evangelism that I'd be involved in, is going out to reach people where they are. But like you say, when people do have an interest, you do want to then be able to maybe bring them into something where the gospel is going to be explained perhaps more fully, and maybe an environment where you get the opportunity to get to know them a little bit better as well and spend more time with them. So yeah, that's a big area, I think, of trying to make sure that the gospel activities that we are running, even within our church buildings, are of a suitable nature.
So what kind of things do you think are, what that you find particularly helpful or effective as follow-up events?
I think things that are a wee bit more informal than our traditional meetings, church meetings. I don't think people are necessarily ready to come to a church meeting, but they want to come to something where they can find out a bit more about the Christian faith. So if we can sort of try and differentiate between those two types of gatherings, I suppose that probably is helpful. There's probably enough barriers for people coming along to something as it is, you know, just going to a different environment, a building they've not been to and so on, without us putting up even more barriers. I think if we can try and take away as many of these hurdles as we possibly can, that is a big help. And so for me, that means trying to make the thing a little bit more informal, taking away some of the formalities and traditions that we perhaps like ourselves, keeping in mind that the whole point of the thing is for the people who are not Christians. They are the focus of that slot that we have, that activity that we're running. So just keeping that in mind. Just for example, I had a chap from one of our soup kitchens just recently. He'd been coming to something else that we've been running at the hall earlier in the year. He'd be coming to that very regularly. It was a more informal thing. He's now kind of stopped coming. He's going to another church in town, which is great. But the reason he stopped coming to us was he just felt that he didn't fit in anymore when we moved back to a more traditional type service, because there was more people there dressed up in their suits and so on. And, you know, well, there's maybe different arguments for and against all that sort of stuff, but the way that he felt, he just didn't feel he fitted into that kind of environment. So thankfully he is going to another church in town and still hearing the gospel.
But, yeah.
You know, it's a hurdle, I suppose, for some people.
Yeah. It's amazing that, what might be familiar and normal to us may not be for somebody who's an unchurched person. I am reminded of a story. I'm not entirely sure of the authenticity of it, but as a story, it actually helps to illustrate the point. Again, a friend of ours, he said about this evangelist who was going to have this campaign in a local church, and said to the elders, look, if I'm coming, then you need to do everything and trust the way I'm going to approach things. Oh yeah, that's all fine. So he arrived on the first day, they had their prayer meeting, and he says, right, we're all going to get in the cars and you're going to follow me. Oh, where are we going? Oh, I'm not going to tell you. You'll find it when you get there. So he got to this place, and it was outside of bookies. And he says, right, I want you to go in and place a bet on a horse. And so, of course, as according to the story, these elders were flummoxed about the very thing. And the point is that, and the point of the illustration, now whether that thing actually happened or not, I don't know, but it really helps illustrate the point, which is, think of how uncomfortable I would be going into a bookies to place a bet on a horse. And yet those things would be quite normal for somebody, some of my neighbours, but for me, it's completely foreign and uncomfortable. Well, that is how they feel when they're coming in to us. And it's like, yeah, okay, that's good to start putting yourself in their shoes and thinking, okay, what are the barriers? And yeah, you said that even just the way that people dress can be a huge barrier. And
I think that's the thing, yeah, trying to put yourself in their shoes, put yourself in the shoes of the average person in the community that you live in, and just think of how they would feel coming into some of the things that we run and organize. It's just a completely alien environment, and I think a lot of the time we don't really think that way. We kind of run these things, you know, in a place that suits us, which is a building that we are comfortable in, that they've never been in before, at a time that suits us, you know, it usually fits in with our program of other activities in the day. It's not necessarily at the best time for somebody to come to, and in a format that suits us as well, you know, a format that we're comfortable with hymns and prayers and so on, which might not necessarily be something that they're familiar with or comfortable with. And I think the key thing for us is we've got to present the gospel, but all the stuff around it, for me, is kind of, it's flexible, and so all the stuff around it can be adapted to make it more comfortable for people who are coming in. And to me, that's one of the key things. If we want to really make an impact on our communities, we need to get into that kind of mindset.
Yeah. No, I think that even when we think about something like the singing of hymns, I know that, I can't remember if we said when we were discussing with Stephen about this, but there's where we were in Shetland, there would be a group within that culture and society that really enjoyed singing hymns. So like the older generation. So we would have events that focused on singing hymns for that part of the community. But for people who are my age and younger, that was just, it was a real put off. So if you're looking to reach them, then don't try to do it through the singing of hymns, because yeah, however much God may have used in the past a hymn, the point is it's the preaching of the word. That's what brings light. And that's what our focus needs to be on. When you were speaking it before about Christianity Explored, that was something that I think you said that John Campbell was quite keen on. Have you had much experience with that?
Yeah, we've run that a number of times over the years. I mean, that would be going back to about 2009, 2010, when we first started to use it in Perth. And we've used it. We used that course many times. We've used other similar types of courses. And in more recent years, we've kind of put together our own courses, you know, same sort of format where you have maybe a talk at the beginning for 15, 20 minutes, and then you divide into groups and you discuss things. And it's all quite informal. You have a cup of tea and coffee or whatever. And people are a bit more relaxed and open to talk about things and ask questions and so on. So yeah, we've done a lot of that over the years and found it's been a good way, really a good environment to bring people in from these different outreaches who have a bit of an interest. Mm-hmm. So it's maybe not necessarily the starting point that, you know, you advertise it and lots of people are going to immediately come, but people that you've had contact with through other things, maybe personal contacts that you've spoken a bit about the gospel to, these are the kind of people that you can then bring into a course like that, in that kind of environment. We've had good success, is not the right word, but success in terms of numbers of people coming along to these things over the years.
Yeah, so in the sense, like the Christianity Explored is like a bit of a bridge between your kind of football outreach soup kitchen and, in a sense, maybe like a traditional gospel meeting, because it's, as you say, it's more informal. They get the chance to ask questions. And I know that in the context we've had with people in our area, then people have lots of questions because they're so unfamiliar with the content of the Bible that there is lots of questions that they have. And as you said, that there's lots of misconceptions. So listening to one message may answer some of those, but it's really when you get into dialogue and discussion that you can really start to meet that spiritual need that exists. And a format like Christianity Explored really kind of helps provide that kind of format where there's discussion.
Yeah, I think it's been very helpful as well, even from a point of view of other types of evangelism, even from preaching, to actually have discussion groups where you begin to learn where people really are at in terms of their understanding. Yeah. You know, the thing about maybe a traditional gospel meeting, you preach the message and people listen, they go out, you don't know really what they're thinking about it. Whereas in a more discussion-based format, you do get feedback on what people are actually understanding, what they're not understanding, the terminology, even the basic language that we would take for granted that people would understand.
Yeah,
folks don't understand simple Bible words. And you only really learn that when you actually sit down and have a discussion with them. You don't get that when you're just standing at the front preaching at people. So it's been useful even from that point of view.
Yeah, no, that's been my exact same experience, that when you preach, it's obviously it's one-way communication. Maybe you're looking at people to see, are they asleep or are they following what you're saying? And sometimes people can look really engaged and think, oh, that's great. They've really followed what I've said. And then when you've actually had this discussion with them afterward, you think, you haven't understood a word of what I've just said. And it's like, okay, that did not hit the mark. And yeah, sometimes we can make that assumption that if they've sat under the message, they've heard the preaching, we've understood it, and that's all great. And but then they've taken something completely different. And it's just so essential, I suppose, in the sense that I think it was even as far back as, I think I remember reading C.H. McIntosh, he talked about the public and the private ministry of the word and how both were essential in terms of believers and also unbelievers.
Yeah.
So is there anything that as you're looking out into the kind of future and what you think that you would like to see done more, whether it be in your own personal experience or the assembly at Perth, or what kind of things do you think would be good focuses to kind of put energy into?
I think it's difficult to look too far ahead, because as I say, I think the key thing is just to continually be looking around for opportunities, and they change all the time. So I think it's a mindset thing more than anything, I think, that needs to be adopted. And it's just the mindset of continually having that evangelistic lifestyle, almost, where you're continually looking for opportunities, whether it's collectively as a church or whether it's individually, personally, in your own life. It's just having that awareness of what's going on in the community around you and just keeping your eyes open for these opportunities. So it's difficult to say, you know, this. And I suppose this is the thing as well. Everybody's always looking for the kind of magic thing. You know, this is the one big thing that, and maybe for a wee while it was seen that, you know, things like Christianity Explored courses were the big sort of answer. But it's really just all of these different things have to be used sort of together, I think. And it all kind of depends on your individual context and community. And so I think it's more of a mindset thing that needs to change. And maybe the big thing in terms of things that we organize is trying to think about them from the perspective of the people that we're hoping are going to come to them.
Yeah.
So to tailor them more along those lines. And it's not just taking away the barriers for people to come. I think it's also taking away the barriers for Christians to invite people to these things. Mm. Because I think, you know, we can see here in Perth, certainly, people from the assembly are much more likely to invite people to these more informal things that we do than they are to invite people to the traditional gospel meetings for whatever reason. Maybe we are a bit embarrassed about the environment of and some of the traditions that go with that. So when those things can be stripped away, it's not the gospel that we're embarrassed about.
No,
it's the actual things that sometimes surround it. So I think even just thinking, making changes from that point of view, it will allow more believers to be more confident of inviting people along to things as well.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really helpful thing to have in our mind. So Gareth, it's been a really interesting discussion, and thanks very much for taking the time to speak today. So we trust that you'll join us again for the next episode when we'll continue to rethink evangelism. Thank you.